It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy, welcome, one and all. It is May 27th, 2021, and it's 1900 UTC, so that means it's time to talk about the news. I'm DJ Marcus, and I'm here to you live. I tried to record this show earlier today, but I just kept getting distracted or pulled off from other things. Thankfully, I had my alerts turned on, because at work, a big service failed, and if I had muted my phone while I was recording, I would have missed it. And then that would have been very bad news for me. Anyway, such is life. It's Thursday, which also means it's beer day, so I'm excited about that. So we'll go ahead and get started. Start the way we always start.
World news.
Well, we usually start, I guess I should say. I'm just going to go ahead and SSH over to SDF. SDF is what powers a non-radio, and surprise it or not, that's also where the live chat is. We just go over there into com, just go com once you log in, and then press enter. That'll get launch com. And then in com, you press G for go to and type a non-radio, all lowercase, all one word. And like magic, sometimes there's a delay. Tick tock, tick tock. There we go. You can join in. And you get in there with all the other cool people that are hanging out there, including Blink and Butts. Well, I don't know how idle they are, but definitely got Ratsu and Blink's logged in. Hobo's logged in. M. Stoney's around. Let's see. Let's press R. See who else is here. The Tobester. Tobe is here. SMJ. Aw, yeah. And it's time to go ahead and get our whirling on. Let's go ahead and talk about it. First up, we'll start in Canada. Justin Trudeau has made a formal apology for the internment of Italian Canadians during the Second World War, acknowledging that hundreds of people were denied due legal process. After Italy declared war against Canada in 1940, Canada interned more than 600 people of Italian heritage and declared about 31,000 as enemy aliens. The Prime Minister said in Parliament on Thursday that those labeled enemy aliens were fingerprinted, scrutinized, and forced to report to local registrars once a month. To the men and women who were taken prison of war camps or jail without charge, people who are no longer with us to hear this apology, to the tens of thousands of innocent Italian Canadians who were labeled enemy aliens, to the children and grandchildren who have carried a past generation's shame and hurt, and to their community and community that has given so much to our country, we're sorry, Trudeau said. Trudeau noted that parts of Frank Iacobucci, it's spelled I-A-C-O-B-U-C-C-I, that parents of Frank Iacobucci, a former justice of Canada's Supreme Court, were among those labeled enemy aliens under a policy he said went against the values of Canada and had gone to war to defend. So, it's good that they apologized. Canada's government had apologized in 1988 for also interning more than 22,000 Japanese Canadians. Canada is now home to approximately 1.6 million Italian Canadians, one of the largest Italian diasporas in the world. So, and the name, put it in com in case you missed it. Hey, welcome, Northern Lights, and welcome. What day? Today's Thursday. It is. It's beer day. I lose track of the days all the time, but hi. Let's keep it moving. Three men are sentenced over Barcelona and Cambrils jihadist attacks. Three men who assisted the perpetrators of jihadist terrorist attacks in and around Barcelona that killed 16 people in 2017 have been jailed in Spain. España is in the news again. Two of the group were handed sentences of 53 and 46 years, while a third man was given an 8-year jail term. Aloha, M. Stoney. Geek Tech Radio's on way too early for me. One of the perpetrators rammed a van into pedestrians in Barcelona's Las Ramblas tourist area before a twin attack was launched in a nearby town. The Islamic State group said it carried out the attacks. The trio were found to have helped the perpetrators, who were all shot dead by police. Mohammed Huli Kimlal, 24, and Driss Ukbir, 32, were sentenced to 53 and 46 years. However, the judge said the pair would not serve more than 20 years behind bars. A third man, Syed bin Ayaza, 26, was given an 8-year term for collaborating with a terrorist group. During the investigation, Kimlal said the cell had planned to target sites like Barcelona's Sagrada Family Basilica. Police also found paperwork relating to Barcelona's Camp Nou football stadium and the Eiffel Tower in Paris. So, yeah, so this was an attack that happened in 2017. Yep. Don't talk about that. All right, we'll keep on moving. Well, when this is what happens when the show's live, when comm's going on, I want to interact with comm, but comm doesn't necessarily always flow in time with the show. So, it's a danger. All you people out there doing live shows, stay vigilant. All right. all right. So here's a fun, or a less serious, less sad story. India YouTuber arrested for flying dog with helium balloons. Indian police have arrested a YouTuber for tying helium balloons to his pet dog in an attempt to make it fly. Gaurav Sharma, 32, shot a video showing his dog attached to balloons, which he then lets go as the pet starts to fly in the air. A few seconds later, someone in the balcony of the second floor of a building catches the dog. Mr. Sharma said he followed all safety measures, but deleted the video after social media backlash. He posted the video to his YouTube channel, which has over 4 million subscribers. Police say they've arrested Mr. Sharma after receiving complaint against him for animal welfare organization from animal welfare organization People for Animals, or PFA. Mr. Sharma later uploaded an apology and explained that he took all safety measures while making the video with his dog Dollar. The video, he says, he was influenced by others and asked people not to be influenced by him. So, very interesting indeed. I am glad that there are rules against this. That dog could have easily just flown all the way way too high up into the air and then died. And then that would have been a terrible surprise for somebody. Speaking of terrible surprises, Melbourne lockdown. Fears over outbreak sparks restrictions. Australia's second most populous state, Victoria, will enter a 7-day lockdown to counter a fast-spreading outbreak in the capital of Melbourne. The lockdown will begin at midnight on Thursday at 1400 GMT. Authorities have so far found 26 cases and identified 150 sites where people may have been exposed. There is growing anxiety over the outbreak, which reminds many locals of a devastating second wave that swept the state last year. Victoria's acting premier, James Merlino, said the outbreak involved a highly contagious strain of the virus, the Bravo or B1617 variant. A returned traveler was infected with the strain, which Mr. Merlino said was spreading faster than we've ever recorded. Cases have been found across the state, with links to a large number of venues, including packed football games at stadiums in Melbourne. With 10,000 primary and secondary contacts cases, with more than 150 exposure sites right around the state of Victoria, we need to act now. If we wait too long, this thing will get away from us. So, for the next 7 days, Victorians will be required to stay at home except for essential work, shopping, exercise, caregiving, or to get a COVID vaccine. No gatherings are allowed, and travel's restricted within 5 kilometers of the home. Mask wearing will be mandatory. Schools will be closed except for children of essential workers. Places of worship and all non-essential venues will also be shut. So, fingers crossed. Seems very scary indeed. Australia has also been slow to vaccinate its population, and the latest outbreak has prompted renewed calls for Australians to get the jab. The country's COVID immunization rollout has been beset with delays due to supply and logistical problems, as well as rising hesitancy to get the jab among some groups. So far, less than 10% of the population has been vaccinated. Sorry, my allergies are starting to bug me. All right. Pretty wild. Fingers crossed. And on radio, if you go to nonradio.net, you can see the schedule, and there's lots of shows. And there's a few shows that are down there in Australia. So hopefully they get to listen to and make lots of non-radio content while they're home, and they're safe and healthy and happy. Or at least we hope they're healthy and happy. All right. Well, what else is going on? Well, you know what it is? It's time to talk about Africa. There's a lot of stuff going on, and we've got some fun stories. So, first up, Somalia's PM commits to free fair polls after months-long impasse. We've talked about this before. Well, Somalia's Prime Minister, Mohamed Hussein Roble, has committed to free and fair polls after he signed an agreement with regional presidents to allow indirect elections to take place. The development came Thursday after months-long delays prompted a crisis. Clan elders
over with. I want to hear. Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Clan elders were meant to have selected lawmakers in December, who in turn were due to elect a new president on February 8th. Both procedures failed to take place amid disputes over issues that included the composition of an election commission that would supervise the voting. So, the disagreements caused concerns that clans could turn on each other and that the Al-Shabaab armed group, which is linked to Al-Qaeda, could exploit a security vacuum. My government and I are committed to implement a free and fair election. We all are responsible to ensure women get their 30% quota of positions. I urge all state presidents to facilitate and implement this, Roble said at a ceremony after signing the agreement. So this should be very exciting indeed. I get excited. There's a lot of pending elections in Africa news lately, and so it'll be great if those elections happen and they're actually fair. Uganda and Bobby Wine come to mind when we're talking about that. So before we play the song, you know,
get the news over with.
Yeah. Before we get that, we gotta go and hit the sad news, of course, because if there's one thing about sad news,
resistance is futile.
There's always more sad news. All right, this comes to us from Nigeria. Dozens of people were missing in northwest Nigeria on Wednesday after an overloaded boat ferrying around 160 passengers sank in the Niger River, a local official said. The boat left central Niger state and was heading to northwest Kebbi state when it split and sank. Abdullah Buriwara, administrative head of the Ingeski district, said, "A rescue operation is underway, but only 22 survivors and one dead body have been recovered. We are talking of around 140 passengers still missing." Boat capsizes are common on Nigerian waterways, mostly due to overcrowding and lack of maintenance, particularly in the annual rainy season. Wara blamed the Kebbi accident on overloading, as the boat was meant to ferry not more than 80 passengers. The vessel was also loaded with bags of sand from a gold mine, the official said. Early this month, 30 people drowned when an overloaded bike capsized in central Niger state. So, very sad indeed, but like you said, it's kind of inevitable. That's just what happens. All right, I'm going to go ahead and pull up a song so that we can go ahead and get some music and get that washed out of our mind. So let's go ahead and dial that up.
Why? Commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That is correct. And that was Our Lady Peace, Superman's Dead, because no one makes it out of this world alive, buddy. All right, well, let's keep on rolling. There's so many things going on in the world, but we still have a few more Africa stories. One that's not so sad. Well, depends on your perspective, I guess. But on symbolic Rwanda visit, Macron recognizes France's responsibility in the 1994 genocide. French President Emmanuel Macron, on a symbolic visit to Rwanda Thursday, said France had a role, a history, and political responsibility towards Rwanda, but he stopped short of an official apology, saying France had not been complicit in the 1994 genocide. Standing here today, with humility and respect by your side, I have come to recognize our responsibilities, Macron said in a speech at Kigali Genocide Memorial, where the remains of 250,000 victims of the 1994 genocide are interred. He said France had a duty to admit the suffering it inflicted on the Rwandan people by too long valuing silence over the examination of the truth. Macron is the first French leader since 2010 to visit the Central African country, which has long accused France of complicity in the mass killings of Rwandan Tutsis. France's Macron says apologize is not the right word in Rwandan genocide. In his speech, Macron said France was not complicit in the genocide. France has a role, a story, and a political responsibility to Rwanda. She has a duty to face history head-on and recognize the suffering she's inflicted on the Rwandan people by too long valuing silence over the examination of truth. While some had been hoping for a full apology, Macron's comments went further than his predecessors, and he said that only those who'd survived the horrors can maybe forgive, give us the gift of forgiveness. The French president arrived in the capital early Thursday and was welcomed by Rwandan President Paul Kagame. The Rwandan president on Thursday hailed his French counterpart for recognizing France's role and responsibility. His words were something more valuable than apology. They were the truth, he told a joint press conference after the two leaders held talks in Kigali. So, there's more detail in the story over there at France 24 if you'd like to learn more. But, wow, I just thought that was actually some good news that France recognized its participation there. But it's still pretty sad because it's genocide, after all. All right, and we talked about Robert Mugabe's wife being fined five cows for improper burial. Well, now we've got a follow-up story, or a different story here. Why a Zimbabwean chief wants Mugabe's remains exhumed? A Zimbabwean traditional chief has ordered for the remains of former late ruler Robert Mugabe to be exhumed from his rural home and buried in the national cemetery. A copy of the ruling in the local Shona language stated, "I give powers to those who are permitted by law to exhume the late Robert Mugabe's remains from Kutama and rebury them at the National Heroes Acre in Harare." Mugabe, who died in 2019, had refused to be buried at the National Heroes Acres in Harare over fears that some individuals, especially his political opponents, might steal his remains and use them in traditional rituals. Last week, the former leader's widow, Grace Mugabe, was ordered by a traditional court to give away five cows and two goats for having buried her husband in a manner deemed inappropriate. She is accused of having buried her husband, who died in 2019 at the age of 95, in the courtyard of her birthplace in Kutama, 90 kilometers west of the capital. Journalists could not attend the hearing as the entourage of the traditional chief said that he wanted some privacy. Chief Zimba, born Stanley Monodoro claimed that Robert Mugabe was supposed to be buried in a location chosen by his mother or the family he was born with. So, Mugabe's family, through their spokesperson, Leo Mugabe, rejected the ruling, claiming that Chief Zimba lacks jurisdiction over Kutama and more so on the matter. Local reports led to traditional chiefs do have the final say on many local matters, but this is the first time a chief is given a judgment on a burial right. So, very, very interesting stuff there. But yeah, so there you go. I think that's really cool. I am so enamored with African news lately. There's so much going on over there that you just don't get to see. So or hear about. Mali's transitional president, prime minister, and prime minister were released after military detention. We talked about this the last couple days this week, but Mali's interim president and premier have been freed from military detention today, senior military and government officials said Thursday. Their release came 3 days after President Ba Ndoye and President Prime Minister Mokhtar Ouani were detained and stripped of their powers in what appeared to be the country's second coup in 9 months. The two men have returned to their homes in the capital of Bamako, those close to them said, though the conditions of their release was not clear. So, well, keep on waiting to see what happened, but it'll be pretty cool. oh no, Tobe is going to have some rituals. That's going to be dangerous. Oh man, hold on.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Check this out. Morocco joins growing list of African countries to legalize cannabis. As more multinational companies are setting up cannabis farms across the world, more attention has been diverted to Africa. More countries are now decriminalizing the use of marijuana in Africa, with the latest being Morocco. Morocco is one of the world's largest producers of cannabis and suppliers illegal byproducts like hashish. The North African country adopted Wednesday the law authorizing the therapeutic use of cannabis, a major reform for this North African country considered as one of the first producers of hashish in the world. The legal use implies means the language in this is a little off. The legal use means it can only be used in medicine, cosmetics, and even for industrial purposes. The law was adopted by the House of Representatives with 119 votes in support and 48 against. So, what do you know? One of the first originators of hash, now totally legal. Last year, Rwanda permitted the production of and processing of medical marijuana with an aim to maximize its profits. The Rwandan government reiterated that its production and use will only be limited to licensed dealers like pharmacies, and that cannabis consumption remains illegal. In South Africa, the government's still pursuing plans to ensure that the Southern African country can maximize on the plant by turning marijuana into a viable business. South Africa is planning to sign the Cannabis for Private Purpose Bill into law with the 2022-2023 financial year. This came after a landmark ruling by the Constitutional Court in 2018 permitting the use, possession, and cultivation of cannabis in private dwellings was not illegal and should be allowed in South Africa. The government was given 24 months to enact the law. So there you go. We keep on going. Uganda has enacted a law. The government spent $264,000 to secure high-quality cannabis seeds in 2019. They secured buyers from Germany and Canada after getting approval from the EU. Other countries have legalized the commercial use and export of cannabis in Africa, including Lesotho, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. So this is very interesting. Africa... You know, tobacco has been a big, huge cash crop in Africa, but as tobacco use in the world wanes, maybe this can pick it up. That'd be really cool. Oh, man, we don't have a whole lot of time, but get this. Oh, my gosh, you guys. Let's go to space. Astronomers have created the largest map of the universe's dark matter. We can't see it. We barely understand it, but we know that it exists because of the powerful influence it exerts in space. Dark matter makes up about 27% of the universe, and its gravitational force is enough to mesh entire galaxies together in a structure known as the cosmic web. Now scientists have created the largest ever map of this mysterious substance, and it could imply that there's something wrong with Einstein's theory of relativity. They have also mapped the location of vast cosmic voids where the conventional laws of physics may not apply. Astronomers are able to map the existence of dark matter by looking at light traveling to Earth from distant galaxies. If the light has been distorted, this means there is matter in the foreground, bending the light as it comes towards us. Using artificial intelligence methods to analyze images of 100-meter galaxies, members of the International Dark Energy Survey, or DES team, Delta Echo Sierra team, a collaborative effort to reveal the nature of the mysterious dark energy that's driving the expansion of our universe, have created a map that covers a quarter of the sky of the southern hemisphere, an eighth of the total night sky visible from Earth. So, very interesting indeed. I'm just excited about that. Dark matter is so cool. It's very neat. All right, so I've got a couple more space stories, but I wanted to keep them brief because we're running out of time. So first, two space rockets have launched up. Oh, what scale is the map? The map is, boop, let's try, back up. It said that the scale of the map was map that covers a quarter of the sky of the southern hemisphere, an eighth of the total night sky visible from Earth. So they were able to, the scale of the map they were able to create is a quarter of the southern hemisphere. So that's what's going on there. Dude, I will post a link in comm. Dark web matter. All right. So here, let's hit these headlines. First, SpaceX launched a Falcon 9 rocket and 60 new Starlink satellites, and the drone ship landing at sea was a total success. So SpaceX got more satellites in the air, in the sky. And then, get this, we had another company, Arianespace, will launch dozens of OneWeb satellites on a Soyuz rocket on Friday. So they're going to be launching a clutch of 36 OneWeb internet satellites into orbit from Russia on the 27th. You can watch that live on, here, I'll put the link in here. But you can watch it live tomorrow if you want. Russia. And then Canada is going to be launching a moon rover by 2026, which is very exciting. The project's going to be a partnership with NASA, and the nation will develop a robotic lunar rover in partnership with NASA and launch it by 2026. And all of that stuff we're throwing into space, get this, commercial space cleanup service could be ready in 2024. Oh, man, I think that's pretty exciting. Japan-headquartered space services company Astroscale, which recently launched its ELSAD, that's Echo Lima Sierra Alpha-D space debris remover demonstrator, might be ready to start cleaning up the mess in the Earth's orbit by 2024. The company, which has offices in the UK, Israel, US, and Singapore, has signed a $3.5 million deal with would-be mega constellation operator OneWeb, who we just talked about, to work together on advancing debris removal technology. OneWeb currently operates over 180 satellites in constellation, meant to reach about 650 satellites, but has asked the FCC to approve over 6,300 satellites in its Phase 2 strategy. So, pretty intense. We're going to have lots of little space satellites up there. Oh man, we're going to run out of time, but please stick around for the Doobie Skulls Committee with Tobe. It's always super fun, and if you're in California, be careful about a guy selling meat door-to-door. He just got busted for mislabeling the meat. So, be careful.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow, and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.